Let's get back to How to Tour Italy on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's your host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Welcome back to the How to Tour Italy show, and let me just start this next segment by thanking Mr. Jonathan Goldsmith of Spaccanopoli Pizzeria. He did a wonderful job, and definitely check out his pizza place, SpaccanopoliPizzeria.com, and you can find links at unabellavista.com/radioshow or TalkZone.com on the How to Tour Italy radio show link from there. Also, the first segment we talked about using the trains, and on both of those places, TalkZone.com, How to Tour Italy, and then unabellavista.com/radioshow. You can find a video that I put together. It's about 9.5 minutes, so I indulge myself with lots of detail, but there's some cool things to see and enjoy as you take a look at the video. It'll give you some good tips. But with that, I would love to introduce one of my favorite people on the planet. Actually, I've got two of them in my booth with me right now. My Uncle Kevin, he's sitting quietly without a microphone, and I've got my Aunt Judy here with me, and we're going to be talking about her wonderful store in Libertyville, Someone's in the Kitchen, and about her cooking classes and her home chef techniques, tools, and equipment that you can buy there. And then we'll end with the last 10 minutes or so talking about growing up Italian, since her last name is Peratori, and with family traditions deeply entrenched in Sicily. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tony. Thank you.
You're welcome. So let's talk a little bit about kind of your motivation for Someone's in the Kitchen. I know that you are a wonderful cook. I can speak firsthand. For the last, 27?
Yeah. And I'm 30.
Exactly. So I can speak firsthand on how wonderful the food is at your home. So I'm not surprised to see that you decided to kind of bring it kind of public and in retail. So tell us a little bit about Someone's in the Kitchen.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, I was able to indulge my inner chef. We bought this business. It's a specialty and gourmet cookware store. We also do cooking classes. So I interact a lot with restaurant chefs in the area. I have met a lot of wonderful people. Plus, it's very entrenched in the neighborhood as well. You see a lot of the same faces and a lot of customer loyalty in that way. So that is fun, too. And I would say that the cooking classes are by far my favorite. It is so much fun. When I first opened the business, I did a lot of the classes myself, and then I was able to branch out. I've hired staff, and they do them as well, but I still do a lot of the Italian cooking classes. And I think one of the most fun things to do is to introduce people not only to Italian food. Everybody knows Italian food. Mm-hmm. If you're on this planet, I think you've had Italian food.
Indeed.
But I think the ethnic part of it is really fun. I've done classes where it's... I call it Foods of the Italian Neighborhood. So it wasn't just the wonderful Italian cuisine, but I brought in the Gigi's and the Simenzi's and introduced them to them, and I explained to them how in the old neighborhoods the men, the little old guy, the little Italian guy with the hand cart would go through Old Town where my family was from and hawk his wares, and the babalooj, the snails, and so people didn't realize that type of thing. And then I brought in my mother's homemade bread, and we pulled it out of the oven and cut it long ways and drizzled it with olive oil and grated cheese and black pepper and put the top back on and sliced it up and handed that out. People were just in heaven.
I can imagine. That's a wonderful dish. Well, if once you get master making the bread, I think the bread is the key, but the
right.
Olive oil and the black pepper and cheese is delicious. And maybe for the listeners that don't speak Sicilian or didn't grow up in the Sicilian side of things, tell them a little bit about those three dishes you mentioned.
Oh, you mean the Gigi's?
The Gigi's.
Okay. Those are just chichi beans. They're dried and roasted, and you can get them in bags in just about any Italian neighborhood. But the little hand cart that I'm talking about, they used to roast them right there. The Zamenzis are pumpkin seeds, with salted, and you just sit there and you eat them until you can feel the salt on your lips and your lips start to crack. So I remember my father eating those and just having just mounds of the shells left over at the end. So that's what that is.
That's great. And I, one of the cool things about Summers in the Kitchen, and Judy had mentioned, is the chefs coming on and teaching, you know, a thing or two and preparing some of the foods for the guests. And the best part is the guests get to then indulge in this wonderful cuisine the chefs made. And last week we had Chef Massimo on from the Mia Francesca restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he has been a guest chef for you.
They loved him.
I would imagine so. He was, he's fantastic. I just went this past Friday to Mia Francesca's to indulge in his cuisine once again. And Lisa Mango was, I didn't get to see Chef Massimo, he was at a different restaurant, but Lisa Mango of Mia Francesca's was there and just delighted us with wonderful, wonderful food and great wines and stuff. So what's really cool, I think, about Someone's in the Kitchen is you get firsthand access in small groups to these wonderful chefs that have been trained internationally and some of the finest chefs you can find, because Chicago, quite frankly, is one of the better food cities, I think, in the United States.
Absolutely. And you could ask the chef any question you have. It doesn't even have to be something that he's doing right at the moment. You know, just questions that you have that you've run across in the kitchen. And so there's that interaction. Plus, we have full meals, which is nice, not just tastings. Because let's face it, I'm Italian, and I don't believe in just giving little bits of anything. They come in. I tell my customers when they sign up, make sure that you come hungry. And, of course, you know, you're welcome to bring a bottle of wine. We cork that at no charge. People enjoy that aspect to a little BYOB, especially in today's economy.
That's great. And I know that outside of the cooking classes and stuff, that you do have, hit the microphone here.
Talking with my hands over here.
I know that you can buy all the things you need to be a wonderful home chef. I mean,
yes.
The knives and all the cookingware that you need. So we have a caller on the line. So it appears to be Veronica, and I'm guessing this is my mother. Mom?
Yes, hello.
I knew it was you.
Hey, Veronica.
Of course, it's me. I'm calling to tell you I'm enjoying the show tremendously.
Well, thank you very, very much. Everyone, this is my very first official caller outside of my scheduled guests. And, of course, it's my mom. I love you, Mom.
I love you, too. This is my favorite hour of the whole week. It's got a double because my sister's on there, too.
Yes, Uncle Kevin's with us, too.
Yeah. Oh, is he? Well, hi, Uncle Kevin.
He can't say. He doesn't have a microphone. He waved.
Oh, well, I wanted to tell you how much I'm enjoying your show.
Well, thank you so very much for calling, and I'm trying to con Kristen to call in as well, but she's too chicken. So thank you for being the first in the pool.
Yes, there we go.
You're welcome, Mom. I love you, and
talk to you later,
we'll talk
Ron.
To you in a bit.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Great job.
Thanks. So with that, we've got about 15 minutes, so maybe a few more minutes talking about, I'm still laughing about, I'm sorry, it was my mom, talking a little bit about some of the great things they can buy to be a home chef, because I know.
Oh, yeah, we have some professional cookware there. I carry the CIA line, Culinary Institute of America, as well as Viking cookware, WMF tools, Lodge cookware, also not Lake Crusade, the Staub cookware. So, you know, pretty much anything that you need. Wonderful knives, all different, probably about 3-4 different lines of the knives. So you come in, and what the difference between us and the larger stores is that when you come in and you have a question, my staff is trained, and they know their way around the kitchen, and they can answer any questions. Heck, we even give out recipes sometimes when people buy something and say, here, you know what? Try this in your new cookware, and give me a call if you have any questions while you're doing it.
That's great. I know one of my friends, Chef Travis of Timpano in Naperville, was a chef expert in your store, and he talked about how great it was, and he was impressed with all of the great quality equipment that you could buy, not only the knives, but the pots and pans and all the things that you would typically find in a restaurant kitchen, but made for the home chef. So he was very complimentary of that. And when I talked to Chef Massimo prior to him being on the show here last week, he had mentioned that he had been part of the presentation series over at your place and loved every minute of it. So.
Oh, he did a really good job. Everybody loved him. And we probably get the chefs from Francesca's restaurants in probably a good 4 or 5 times a year. My customers are huge fans of that. And
sure.
Any of the Italian classes always. But we have all different kinds of classes. I mean, French and German and Mexican and you name it, a little bit
sure.
of everything. As you can imagine, there's a lot of restaurants out there and a lot of specialties.
Well, one of the segments, I thought, or rather one of the sessions, this will be kind of the last piece, and then we'll dive into kind of growing up Italian here, but that you did a barbecue class. class, or rather a grilling class, and you did it on the sidewalk with people cooking in the streets. Rather not the streets, excuse me, but just outside the restaurant.
Right on Milwaukee Avenue, exactly.
Yeah.
We had the grills out there going and the chef out there cooking, and people love that. And of course, people are driving by in their cars and asking what's for dinner, and that is one of my most popular classes.
I'll bet. So tell us, tell the listeners a little bit about how to find you and take a look at your class schedule and
sure.
how to get to your store.
Sure, thank you. We are on Milwaukee Avenue in downtown Libertyville, 522 North Milwaukee, and my website is www.livelovecookeat.com. That was compliments of Tony.
Thank you very much.
Yes. He said, I got a great one for you when you open up the store. So you can get my class lineup online. And also, we've enjoyed this whole process so much that my husband and I, when we retire, we're going to be retiring to Sedona soon.
Nice.
And we're going to open up a store very similar to this out there because I think that there's a market for that. So my Libertyville store is going on the market. It's up for sale now. So if there's anybody out there that wants to indulge their inner chef, you know, they can contact me through my website or through you. I'm sure you can forward it. But it's just a wonderful opportunity, a turnkey situation, and I've loved it.
That's great. Well, that is wonderful. And with that, I think we're going to transition here a little bit about growing up Italian, which was kind of the inspiration for why you decided to open up the store and continue that down in Sedona.
Yes.
So it's interesting. I'm always curious, like, what are one or two of your favorite memories growing up Italian, or rather, and let me just kind of draw the line here. Aunt Judy is Sicilian, and everyone on my mom's side comes or hails from Sicily, so... you know, if there's anyone that wants to argue the point, give us a call at 888-463-6748 or 888-GO-FOR-IT, the difference between Italians and Sicilians. But for now, we're just going to lump them together because we only have 10 minutes.
Oh,
we
thank
can't
you,
get into
Tom.
That.
Yeah. We'll talk later. Okay?
Exactly. Sorry. So I was wondering, tell us a little bit about one or two of your favorite memories growing up.
Well, I think what is quintessentially Italian, at least in my family, is the Sunday dinner. It was always a gathering place at my mother's house, my grandmother before her, but at my mother's house for many, many years. You know, there was a 7-course meal between noon and 4 o'clock. I would wake up on Sunday mornings to the smell of the garlic and the onions, hitting that olive oil in the pan as my mom was starting the zugu.
That sauce
in Sicilian. my mom making the zugu. And, of course, we couldn't eat before going to Mass because we took communion there. So you just had to smell the sauce and smell the bread baking before you leave. You couldn't touch a thing because you had to fast.
Right.
You'd go to church, but you always knew when you're sitting in church, your mouth was watering thinking about those meatballs. And you'd come home, the family would be there. And it wasn't just the food, the pasta. I mean, there was antipasta. There was homemade bread. There was desserts, of course, but also with the main course. There's the salad. And then she would throw in a pork roast, maybe some gravy, mashed potatoes for anybody who didn't have a taste for all pasta that day. So it was just eating all day long. And, of course, you fry some dough up at the end. You put a little sugar on it, you know,
yeah.
And you got in you. And then with my dad's homemade wine, and so that was our Sundays, every Sunday.
That's true. That was actually one of my favorite desserts, and they're relatively hard to find.
Gutteronis, they're called.
Exactly.
Gutteronis, they're called.
And you can actually, if your grandma doesn't make them or somebody in your family, a lot of the bakeries at the old neighborhood, like around Harlem University, have something similar to that, although they're always better fresh out of the pan.
They are, and you know what you can do if you don't want to make your own dough is just go and get the frozen dough, like... at the grocery stores, defrost it and pull pieces off of it, you know, flatten it down a little bit, put a little bit hole in the center, so, and you put them in the hot oil until they're nice and brown, you pull them out and you put sugar on them and you're good to go, and they're fresh tasting that way.
Exactly, and believe it or not, they're as good with wine as they are with coffee, so
oh, yeah.
Try it both ways.
Yeah.
you know, maybe start with the coffee, then lead up to the wine, or vice versa. Maybe you need the coffee after the wine, I don't know. But, I do. I'm lucky enough to have in my possession my grandfather's wine press, which he made from scratch, which is one of my prized possessions in life. So,
and I have the baby version of it.
That's right.
When my father, Tony's talking about my father making that wine press, he made it by hand. He was a carpenter as well as a Chicago fireman, but he was a carpenter. And he made the wine press, which he used, called, I believe it was called Nelson Alley Winery.
Yeah, it was.
And he also made a mini version, because when my mother saw him doing the grapes that way, she said, you know what, that would really come in handy for when I do the fruit for the preserves. So I have the small one, you have the big one.
Exactly, and it's it works like a charm. I have to admit, though, I have not yet made homemade Italian wine. However, I'm going to spend quite a bit of time here this coming year and next year in Italy, and one of my goals is to learn the real techniques. Unfortunately, I didn't get to learn from my papa, but I did learn a little bit from one of my uncles, and I want to kind of master the techniques, and I'm going to try to do so around the Tuscan hillside. I've managed to make some relationships with some folks to try to put that to good
wonderful.
Use. Yeah, so that'll be nice. And you can all fake like you like it, and you know, I won't even charge you for it, but hopefully it'll be good. We'll see how that goes. One of the, I guess, you know, the Irish have St. Patrick's Day. Well, the Italians have a holiday that is
you know what,
very
it's a Sicilian
festival.
Holiday, as a matter of fact, Tony.
Sicilian holiday, yeah, excuse me. I do apologize. And it's St. Joseph. My middle name is Joseph, so I, in large part, am celebrated on this wonderful day. So it's a St. Joseph's table, and Aunt Judy will talk about it, because unfortunately, once we got a little older, the kind of the capacity of it or how large we celebrated kind of diminished a little bit. But maybe Aunt Judy can share with us some of the stories and how many people and how much food and what the St. Joseph's tables were like.
Oh, it was amazing. It started out at my Nana's house. She always had the St. Joseph table, and the women of the family would make a promise to St. Joseph for special, maybe a special request, and they would make a promise. For instance, they would say, I'm going to wash the dishes the whole day, and that's my promise, and St. Joseph will then see that I'm working so hard and maybe grant me a special wish or, you know, something like that. The children, they would dress the children as the saints and do the procession, and it used to be actually an open house back in the old days, and people would put coins into plates on the table, and all the money for that would go to the church. But we had one every year, and the women would cook for weeks ahead of time, and there was so much food. There used to be as much food under the table as above. In other words, there were just bins and bins of it, that it was just a never-ending flow of it, and there was friends and family from all reaches, and it was a wonderful thing. It used to be held in my grandmother's basement, and as a matter of fact, I did one a couple years ago, invited the whole family. I ended up with about 125 people in my home. My grandmother always said, the home will hold what the owner wants it. And it did, and we got to see all of our cousins again and everything, but it was always a wonderful tradition, filled with everything on the table except meat. It was
right.
All vegetables and pastas and fish and desserts and wines and all of that. So it was a wonderful feast.
It is a good feast, and I loved all the food except usually, we're wrapping up in about 2 minutes here, but the, mm-hmm. the last thing, I guess the main pasta sauce, I think it was the anchovies and a bunch
pasta
of...
Pasta zarde,
yeah.
That was with sardines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I liked it, but you had to have one plate of it, and I just did my
one
plate.
You had to have the one plate, and it was with the large bucatini pasta.
Yeah.
And then they would put the breadcrumbs over the top of it, and you always had to have just a little bit,
yeah.
because that was tradition.
Yeah, exactly.
And then remember the dried lupini beans? They used to have them in the bowls on the table, and then you'd put them in your wallet. I still carry a lupini bean to this day, because if there's a lupini bean in your change purse, they'll say you'll never be without money.
I need about a dozen lupini beans. You can send it to my address. Well, with that, I want to introduce, or rather, our next week's show. But I do want to thank Aunt Judy very, very much for coming in and being a wonderful guest
thank
with
you,
me today.
Thank you, Tony. I had fun.
And thanks, old Kevin. You contributed so well over there. I love it. And once again, Mr. Jonathan Goldsmith of Spockinopoli at Spockinopoli Pizzeria.
Oh, and they're open for lunch, Tony.
Yes, we're going to head over there. And next week, we have Kathy McCabe of Dream of Italy, the newsletter, and then Mindy Kaplan of Lou Malnati's Pizza, a different kind of pizza than Spockinopoli, but good yet. Ciao, everybody, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao.